I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Marie Phillips joins me now. She's the author of God's Behaving Badly. It is her first book, and she's become an international literary sensation. The UK native has sold the book rights throughout the world, and Red Hour Films, Ben Stiller's production company, has just optioned the book for a future television series. Set in North London, the book sees the Greek gods living in the 21st century. Artemis is a dog walker, Aphrodite is a phone sex operator, Apollo is a TV psychic. As their powers wane, they fight amongst each other and interact with two humans, Alice and Neil. Marie Phillips studied anthropology and documentary filmmaking. Now a full-time writer, Ms. Phillips was a bookseller right before God's Behaving Badly was bought by a publisher. Published by Random House, the book retails for $29.95. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Marie Phillips. Good morning, Ms. Phillips.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
I read in your bio or somewhere that your father is Lord Chief Justice. Does that, and you dedicate your book to your parents, does that entitle you to a courtesy title like Lady Phillips?
Oh, my goodness. Things that I would hate to get out, but no, yes, it does. I am, believe it or not, the Honourable. The Honourable Miss Phillips. Miss Marie Phillips, actually.
This is your first book. Have you always written?
Yeah, I've always written. It's always been a passion of mine ever since I was a child.
I read somewhere that this is the first book that you'd actually written a novel as young as 13.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think, you know, even when I was even younger than that, I would start novels. You know, I'd start one age 8 and then wonder why I didn't seem to have the stamina to continue. But the first one I actually managed to write and finish was. I had found a book at school called The Joy of Bagpipes, which struck me as being a particularly surprising title for any book. It was actually about bagpipes. And so I wrote a book called The Lone Bagpipe, which was a kind of Victorian Gothic drama set in Scotland. I don't think I'd ever even been to Scotland. And sort of variously involved sort of ghosts wandering the halls of lonely castles playing bagpipes and various people kind of plunging to their deaths in the bottoms of freezing cold lochs in, you know, the middle of nowhere in Scotland and so on. I had a really, really great time writing it, and I think that probably sort of got me even more excited about the thought of writing a real novel when I was older.
Is writing what you'd always wanted to do?
Well, I've always written, and I've always enjoyed writing. And I think there was a time when I was younger where I thought, yeah, when I grow up, I'm going to be an author. But as you get older and a little bit more sensible, you realize that you can't, you know, it's very difficult to just be an author because no one is going to pay you to sit there and write a book. You know, they only pay you once you've finished. So, you know, so I have more sensible ideas of other things that I was going to do. I was going to work in TV and, you know, a normal career that a normal person would have. But then when I started pursuing my career, I realized that I just really, really missed writing. And more and more, I just thought, you know, this is how I want to spend my time. This is what I want to do with my time. And it's my time, and I don't have that much on Earth, so I better spend it doing what I love. So I quit my career in television, and I got a job in a bookshop because obviously I still needed to eat. But it was a very different, you know, relationship I had with my paid work. I actually loved working in the bookshop, but I tried to do as little of the work as I possibly could. I just wanted to be, obviously not while I was there. My bosses would be outside the room, you, I was trying to do as little work as possible.
Right,
I worked hard while I was there, but, you know, I tried to do as few shifts as I could get by on, you know, and I really made as many financial sacrifices as I could in order to buy myself the time to write. Because writing is incredibly time-consuming, and even working part-time, it still took me 2.5 years to write God's Behaving Badly. But I was so, you know, I enjoyed it so much that I never resented not having as much money as I did, and, you know, I really enjoyed the job while I was there, and then I would close the door, I would leave the shop, and I would be completely consumed with my writing.
And how would you describe this book? I've only read, unfortunately, a part of it, but to people who are unfamiliar with it thus far, perhaps listening to us, where did you get the idea of taking the Greek gods and putting them in 21st century London?
Well, I got the idea when I was helping a friend out on a documentary that she was working on. She asked me to, you know, I wasn't working in TV then, but she asked me to come and help for a couple of days. And it was a topic that they were discussing at school. They were talking about the differences between the Greek gods and the modern Judeo-Christian god. And so So, you know, they were talking about how the Greek gods had these very human or even larger than life personalities, and how they had all these sort of human flaws like jealousy and lust and arrogance and rage, all the kinds of things that I tried to write about. And that gave me the idea for, you know, it made me think, well, you know, what if the Greeks were right? What if these really were the gods? You know, where would they be and what would they be doing? So that gave me the idea. And so what I did was I took these kind of incredible personalities of the gods, these great mythological stories, and I decided to update them to modern London, because I thought, well, you know, if the Greek gods really are the gods, they're the gods of the whole world, so they don't have to be in Greece. I could put them in London, you know, a city where I live that I'm very familiar with, and then I can really have fun with the difference between this very, for me, familiar domestic setting and these huge, sort of exaggerated, larger-than-life characters. So the book sort of relocates the gods to London now. They live in this dilapidated townhouse. They're not powerful anymore. At least they have some power, but not as much as they used to. They're forgotten. No one believes in them. So they have very bruised egos. And yet they spend their time doing the kinds of things they always did in the myths, which largely is arguing amongst themselves and interfering in the lives of mortals.
I read somewhere that someone who'd read the book, who'd finished the book, I should say, had compared your handling of the Greek gods to how we're fascinated with B or C list celebrities. Is there a relationship, do you think, between what we mythologize now and what perhaps the Greeks did then?
Well, I think that there is definitely that analogy to be made. I mean, one of the characters I write about, Apollo, has decided that the best way for him to recapture his glory days is to become a TV star. And he starts off in a rather unprepossessing way. He starts off by trying to be a psychic on the psychic channel. But essentially, yes, there's certainly something to be said for the idea that, you know, despite the fact that people worship the Greek gods, it didn't make the gods behave any better. It makes you wonder, you know, why they were worthy of worship at all. And they were mostly worshipped because they were capricious and dangerous, and it was best to have them on side. And I think that there's something to be said for this idea that these days, you know, celebrity is what we revere. So again, we're in a situation where we are holding up as the highest in society people who, you know, frequently, and you know, obviously I'm sure some celebrities, yeah, have this unimpeachable lives, but a lot of the people that we seem to be fascinated by, the sort of Britney Spears of this world, the people who really, you know, are not necessarily particularly great role models, and yet we can't talk of anything else, we can't think of anything else. They are right at the center of our universes. So there's definitely, you know, a parallel between now and then.
The idea that the gods are losing their power in this day and age, that's awfully fascinating. If you have some knowledge of Greek mythology, talk to me about that and how exactly are they losing their power? I guess because they have to resort to walking dogs or going on television.
Well, I don't want to tell you how exactly or why they're losing their power, because that kind of gets. That's sort of a turning point towards the end of the book. But it's very much true that the reserves of power are running out. Basically, the relationship between a mortal and a god is a very interesting one, because we depend upon each other. If you believe that there are gods, obviously we depend upon the gods. But what is a god without a mortal? What is a god without a worshipper? And so, you know, I'm looking at issues of sort of their fading relevance. You know, are they still relevant in the modern world, or are they still important? And, you know, do we still need something to believe in, or can we just do without it completely?
How do you write? Did you find that it consumes most of your day?
Well, it really depends what you mean by writing. I tend to probably spend half of my working day at the computer. I like to work through the morning, and I'll sometimes work a little bit in the afternoon as well. But really, I usually have finished my actual writing day, my computer time, working, putting words on paper day, you know, by sort of 1:30. So I do about 4 hours of it in the morning. But the reason that I actually don't work through the afternoon is I've found from experience that it's counterproductive, because you need a certain amount of thinking time away from the computer. Because if you write too, if I write too much on one particular day, the next day I'll have overshot my thinking process and I won't have anything to put down. So you sort of got to leave your brain time to sort of, you know, think over what you've done and think over what's going to happen, you know, on the next day. So, and I've spoken to a lot of writers about this, and actually it seems that we all, a lot of writers write in the morning, and most of us average about 4 hours a day. That doesn't, I can do six on a really, really good day, but I can't do, really do more than that. And personally, I find it really handy to have a target to work for. I find that that really helps keep my bum on the seat and keeps me at the computer. And I do, I try to aim to do around 1,000 words a day. But because that's a relatively high amount, I know some novelists who do much, much less. Or some do a lot more as well. But I find that I'm writing relatively fast, and so I often have to go back and rework things. But essentially, it's always going to be a balance between your thinking time and your writing time. The best way to ensure that that things go smoothly is to not underestimate the time that you're away from the computer, just letting the ideas flow.
And then what do you do, though? You obviously read, do you?
I actually, I do most of my reading before I actually start writing the novel. So with God's Behaving Badly, I did almost all of my research before I began. And when I actually got further into writing the novel, I would only do research as something very specific came up. So say I was introducing a new character that I hadn't anticipated. At that point, I might go away and look at some of the myths associated with them and so on. But no, I don't do an awful lot of reading in the afternoon. I do chores, you know, kind of boring everyday stuff, you know, laundry or going to the supermarket. Or, I do some yoga. I might go and have a swim or go for a walk. But I find that doing something fairly mundane frees up my mind to just play with the ideas that I'm working on and come up with new and different thoughts about what I might want to do with my next morning's writing.
Do you watch television at all?
Oh God, I love television. Love it. I have to be fairly disciplined because watching TV is completely counterproductive to getting ideas. On the other hand, it is very, very restful for the mind. So it's a good break, but it's a very, very bad thing to do when you should be thinking. So I punctuate my day. I always stop for lunch in time for Neighbours, which is an Australian soap opera. And that used to be on at 1:30, very irritatingly, but it's now on at 2:10, which is slightly too late for me for my lunch. But nevertheless, I like to have my lunch with Neighbours. And then in the evening, if I'm working in the evening, because I'll often do a bit more writing, if I haven't quite reached my target, I'll write again between 4 and 6. And then at 6, there's another Australian soap opera called Home and Away. So my day is very well punctuated by Neighbours and Home and Away. And occasionally, there'll be a big sporting event like Wimbledon, and they'll cancel Neighbours for 2 weeks while they screen Wimbledon. And that's it. My day goes completely off the rails. I have no idea when to have my lunch. It's a total disaster. But I read that Nabokov was obsessed with trashy American television. And I feel that if Nabokov could write Lolita under the influence of watching Bonanza and talk shows, I reckon that this is not doing me any harm.
And you know, back to this idea of celebrity and so on, do you find that you watch reality shows?
I've kind of lost interest in reality shows. I think like everybody else, I was fascinated by Big Brother. But the one show that I'm still completely obsessed by is Strictly Come Dancing, which is the UK equivalent of Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
And I cannot explain to you why it holds such fascination for me. But basically, it's just so wonderful. You have them dancing, you have outfits, you have people who are learning this thing. It's so uplifting. You watch people who start off not being all that excited about the dancing and, you know, becoming more and more obsessed by the dancing and getting better and better. It's very encouraging. I sort of think it's good for children to watch because it's all about how if you work hard, you can succeed. And I love all the behind-the-scenes gossip. And this year was particularly great because a friend of mine was actually writing for a sort of gossip magazine. And she got all the behind-the-scenes Strictly Come Dancing gossip. So I'd get email updates constantly of little naughty bits of news that she'd heard that I was under strict instructions. I wasn't allowed to tell anybody, but I had a hotline to Strictly Come Dancing. And, you know, I think I like any kind of television as long as it's done well, and I don't hold with this idea that some forms are superior to others. So I will quite cheerfully watch Strictly Come Dancing and then put on a DVD of The Wire and watch that as well. And I don't hold, and I feel the same way with novels, you know, I don't hold with this idea that, you know, either you're a serious thinker and you think serious thoughts and you only read and watch serious things, or, you know, that you're a bit flaky and a bit stupid, and that you're just going to watch trashy stuff and have no independent thoughts and no interest in the world. I see no contradiction between watching, like, you know, a really cheesy romantic comedy movie and then a serious news program. I think people who think they're above fun are really missing out.
And do you find that you have time to write on tour as you are here in Vancouver currently?
No, that's one thing that I can't do. I mean, partly because, a tour like this, I'm booked up from, you know, I started work this morning at 9 o'clock, and actually that was pretty late morning, but tomorrow I start at 7:15, and I'll be working all the way through the day. So there aren't any windows of opportunity at all to do any writing. But the other thing is, you know, I kind of forget that this is work, and I find myself after a 12-hour day of giving interviews thinking, oh, God, it's so awful, I haven't done any work. But I suppose what I mean is I haven't had a chance to think about my writing, and I haven't had a chance to write anything, and I do miss it when I'm not doing it. And so I'm very much looking, you know, much as I'm enjoying, it's very exciting to be in Canada and meeting loads of people and seeing lots of places I would never otherwise have the chance to see. But I must admit, I'm really looking forward to getting back home and just getting stuck into the writing again.
And the reaction to the book in your country has been good, hasn't it?
Of course, the reviews have been amazing. I just couldn't believe it. I think that people are quite merciful on your first novel. You know, there's a sense that it's, you know, they're quite excited. It's a new writer coming along, and they're really interested to see what you could do and what you can come up with. I think, you know, the dogs come out for the second novel. So, you know, I do think that they've probably given me a somewhat easy ride. But even having said that, I was totally overwhelmed by how positive the response has been. And I it's very difficult. As a writer, I think it was Kurt Seer who said, you think everything you write is obvious because you've thought of it. You have no sense that anything could be surprising. There is no way of getting a distance from what you've written and having some idea of what the experience is like to read it. And so the whole time when I was writing God's Behaving Badly, I was just thinking, well, you know, I like it. I don't know what anyone else is going to think. I have no idea if anyone else would even be remotely interested in reading this stuff. So when the reviews started coming in and they were very, very positive, I thought, well, you know, it was completely unanticipated, but I just thought, well, this is great. I was so happy that people actually seem to be enjoying reading this book that I'd written.
And the second novel, you're working on that now. Can you reveal what that'll be about?
I'm being incredibly cagey about the second novel, I'm afraid. Mainly because it's actually my third attempt at writing a second novel since I finished Gods. I started one and it didn't work, and then I started another and it didn't work. So I've become very wary of telling people blithely, saying, oh, I'm writing this. And then, you know, a week later someone says, oh, you know, how's that book going? And I have to shamefacedly confess that I've given up on it and started something new. So I'm being very coy, and I'm not telling anyone yet what I'm writing about. But I'm enjoying writing. It seems to be going well. I think it will have the same sort of humor to it as God's Behaving Badly, but the content will be quite different.
And are you involved at all in the adaptation of this book?
I don't think I'm going to be involved in a formal capacity. I could have pushed for that, I imagine, if I'd wanted to, but for me, I was ready to move on and to work on something else, and a production of a television program, as I know from my TV days, can take a really, really long time. And I thought, you know, if I try to be too formally involved in this, I'm going to be working on God's Behaving Badly for years. You know, this is all I'm going to be able to do. So, you know, it's in very good hands. Ben Stiller is a very, very funny guy, and their production company has made some really great movies. So I have a lot of confidence in their ability to do a good job. But having said that, you know, if the series really took off and, you know, they wanted me to write like one episode as a special guest writer or something like that, I would jump at the chance. But I really think, you know, there comes a point with an adaptation where you just need to let go and to hand it over to somebody else and you know, just wait and see what they can do with it. So it'll be very interesting to see how it comes out.
Marie, it's been a pleasure to have you on today and talk about this book. I will finish it. And congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it.
Great, thank you very much.
The book is called God's Behaving Badly, $29.95 from Random House. house for the commentary. I'm Joseph Plantum.